Social media is such a huge story for our time. Billions of people around the world belong to social media networks, and many of those belong to Facebook. It's so much a part of life now that social media gets made fun of in other media. For example, the New Yorker cartoon where a therapist says to a client, "Let's focus on your posts that do get likes." Social media and the social things that emerge from the interactions there is also a focus for researchers, like the researchers at the University at Buffalo, who looked into what rejection on social media can do to people on the receiving end. Jessica Covert is the lead author of the study with Michael Stefanone, and she joins us by phone. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, and I should point out you're a graduate student in the Department of Communication, and this work appears in the journal Social Science Computer Review for August. What was the starting point for the research, Jessica? What did you set out to find initially?
So initially we were really interested in, well, to be honest, a lot of the research that I do comes from my own personal experience with things, and I honestly found myself getting kind of emotional about seeing my friends interact without me online. And so I wondered to myself, do other people experience these things? And what could be the consequences of these things? So that's what really kind of inspired me to do this, to see if people actually interpret these things as social exclusion. And how do they respond to these things? Do they get upset about it? Or what are the potential consequences of that?
And reading right from the abstract of the research, using these platforms increases the probability of observing exchanges among their friends in which they were unintentionally excluded. So, I mean, with social media, we actually have a greater capacity now to find out about parties or hangouts to which we were not invited, don't we?
Absolutely. It's so different from the way things used to be, right? We used to find out about one of our friends were hanging out, doing fun things through word of mouth, right? We never actually saw these things happening in real time. And social media is so fascinating because we're being pushed these real-time transcripts of conversations between our friends, what they're doing, what they're talking about, where they're at, the fun parties and hangouts they're attending.
Yeah, so now you get a chance to look at and see the pictures of all the fun you got to miss out too.
Mm-hmm.
So given that, how did you recruit people to the study? I mean, and they essentially then did have to open themselves up to the possibility of rejection, didn't they?
Absolutely. It's kind of standard practice with a lot of the research that we do. We have our Communication 101 classes. They have to take part in research credit to not only help researchers get their work done, but also to have them experience these like actual communication phenomenon. So we actually recruited people from our own institution and implemented these imagined scenarios of their friends interacting without them.
Yikes. So in order to pass Communications 101 at the University at Buffalo, you have to open yourself up for these studies?
Yes, you have to take part in research. And it's an eye-opening experience, too, to hear about these things and actually experience these things. So I think they enjoy it, and also they get credit for their participation, too.
Now, I did see a quote from your co-author, Michael Stefanone, about the slights not necessarily being intentional. Does social media just have a greater capacity for wounding people than older forms of communication?
So, because there's a lot of social psychological research out there that suggests that when we see any sort of exclusion, even if it's not intentional, so somebody could snub us in the hallway, we might not necessarily know them, but we have these biological responses, right? Because social exclusion is bad, right? From an evolutionary perspective, we need people to survive, so we have to live in groups. So there's a lot of literature out there that suggests that we have these innate responses to surveil our environment and really kind of look at these things and respond to them as though they have tremendous consequences. And what I think is novel about social media is that we're always on these sites and we're always being exposed to these interactions between other people, members of our network. And although they're not intending to exclude us, not intending to harm us, we tend to interpret that as though it was intentional exclusion. Again, from an evolutionary perspective, this is so that we can kind of prevent the harm from being done before it occurs.
So on that receiving end, I mean, if you feel like you've been a little wounded by perceived slights or exclusions, Do we have a greater capacity via social media to, I mean, does it hurt worse, I guess, is what I'm asking.
That is a good question. Our research suggests that, yes, it does hurt a little bit worse because we're kind of making ourselves susceptible to these things, right? Because I know with my own personal use with social media, every time I'm waiting for an appointment to start, a meeting, I'm always on these networking sites, you know, checking in on what other people are doing. And although I might think it's harmless and I'm just trying to pass the time, I'm exposing myself to those exclusion cues, and therefore I'm responding to them in real time, all the time, really.
Jessica Covert is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the lead author of a study of social media exclusion and the impacts it has on people. And it leads to things that we'll learn more about in just a moment, like greater susceptibility to the advertising that is displayed on social media. The work is contained in Social Science Computer Review, published in August of this year with Michael Stefano and the co-author. You can join the conversation on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Two things I wonder then. Number one is while you're using students who are enrolled in the Communication 101 class at the University at Buffalo, how much the curriculum has changed over the years of that course itself to be able to respond to the changes and the growth of social media?
What I think is super helpful, although it is a convenient sample, and we definitely want to expand this and look at it in different types of populations, so older populations who social media is a little bit more new to them. These people, our undergraduate students, they're a great sample to look at because they are the heaviest users of social media. They do use these as like the prime forms of communication to connect with their friends and keep up with them real time of what's going on. So although it's convenient, it actually is representative of the true population that uses these forms of technology.
It sounds like in that age group then that there's a feeling that you really can't get off social media because you'd miss too much.
Absolutely. I don't study addiction or anything like that, but I have definitely read a lot of research about how people just can't put down the phone, you know. It's a big thing about, like, when people go out to dinner. I know me and my friends have played this game, too, where it's like whoever picks up the phone first and looks at Facebook, they have to pay for the entire meal, you know, because it's a battle that we're constantly fighting with, always being connected and trying to like stay real-time, present moment, and experiencing those face-to-face interactions.
We had talked earlier about the wounding that people feel when they perceive slights on social media. And I didn't ask it very specifically, but I mean, is part of the thing that it's a bit more of a public kind of a snub?
Absolutely. I know from my own personal experience, when we see our friends interacting without us, it doesn't only have like intrapersonal consequences. It's not that I only feel bad about it. It's that other people in my network also see that too. So it's embarrassing. It's a little bit of a public shame that we weren't included in this thing, this cool thing that our friends are doing. So I would definitely say the publicness of this entire thing definitely affects how people feel about it and the real consequences of it.
So you did follow the trail just a bit further, Jessica, and it gets into the things that people do with the bad feelings. First of all, how did you measure or monitor what happens actually in people's brains or wherever they're feeling the snub?
So in this study, we just measured their direct feelings. So they just self-reported how they felt about this imagined scenario if they were to experience this type of stuff. But our research is definitely, we're trying to delve more into it and see how people respond to these real-time exclusions when we're actually on Facebook and how we feel about it. But then also, we all know that Facebook runs off of advertising, right? And so what could end up happening is if we are spending time ruminating about our emotions and really focusing on how we're feeling and really suppressing those emotions, because at the end of the day, what happens on Facebook, right, it's quote-unquote not that big of a deal, right? So we don't want to act upon that, because if we act upon that, then we could damage our networks even more and our friends and the relationships that we have. So what we're going to end up doing is taking a lot of our resources in our brains and try to suppress those emotions. But what ends up happening, and what we're looking at now, is what ends up happening when you end up trying to lessen those emotions, not experience them too much, not act upon them. You don't have resources left over to make educated decisions, logical decisions, if you will. And what ends up happening is we always see advertisements on Facebook for cool things that we would want to buy. And what could end up happening is we might be more susceptible to these persuasion tactics because we're focusing on the emotions that we're feeling from being excluded from our friends as opposed to processing these persuasion tactics and really thinking about what we're doing.
So somebody who's feeling wounded because they're seeing pictures of friends who were at a party that they didn't get invited to might, rather than lash out at the friends, go ahead and see something that looks like they might want to buy it on Facebook?
Absolutely, because honestly, if you the bigger consequence is if you lash out at your friends, right? You don't want to lose that person in your life because we all have this inherent need to belong that we have to fulfill. And so that's really important to suppress those emotions, because if we lash out at somebody about something that happened on Facebook, that might have actual consequences for our real-life relationships. And so if we're focused on that, then we might be more susceptible to these advertisements telling us that we should buy these things, and we might be more likely to do that.
So, Jessica, I didn't ask about this part of the research, whether you actually set up situations in which people would feel slights or if it's just sort of whatever happened naturally and organically between groups of friends on Facebook.
So in this particular study, we created imagined scenarios that typically happen all the time. So just imagine that your group of friends is talking without you online. How would you feel about that? Do you pay attention to that? And what degree of, like, anger do you feel? Just generally, how do you feel about these things positively or negatively? What I think is so impactful is that we did find significant results by just creating an imagined scenario. So what we're trying to do now is to actually look at these things in real-time exposure. But we do see the results by just having people imagine these things.
So in an imagined scenario, then nothing actually was transmitted online that fit in with that scenario? It was not ever brought into the real zone of Facebook?
Right.
Okay. So, if again, the hypothesis here is that we're getting to greater susceptibility to advertising, it sounds similar to what people still, I think, call retail therapy, where when you're feeling down, you go out and buy shoes or something.
Absolutely. And what's more dangerous is now that we have the internet, all these things are readily accessible to us. So it's this cycle. We're seeing our friends doing things without us. We're upset about it. So we compensate in other ways. And we're influenced by a lot more things than we actually think we are.
Well, you know, it may not be a great thing for people to feel bad enough to want to go buy shoes or sports cars or whatever, but, you know, it sounds like potentially a lucrative situation anyway for both the medium and the advertiser because it raises the effectiveness at an ad. And I wonder if you explored any whether this is by design or by accident.
That is a good question. We haven't yet. We're looking towards looking at that, but it's more than just advertising and consumerism. If you think about it, too, we have a lot of public opinion that's being disclosed online, trying to influence people and their political views and all of that. So I don't think it just applies to just buying things. I think a lot of it, too, is attitudes as well.
Explain that a little more.
As we all know on Facebook, people are always trying to influence other people to believe in their political views and support this candidate versus not supporting other candidates too for political offices and stuff like that. So I think that it's more than just these things are more than just applicable to buying things, consumerism. I think it can be actually influenced in more of like the political realm and just general attitudes about the world and what's going on. And
A person who's feeling wounded a little by friends on Facebook might not just be susceptible to advertising, but to persuasion of other kinds as well.
Absolutely.
So are there recommendations that emerge from your research about how to approach social media?
I think the biggest takeaway from all of this is just to be aware. If you're aware of it, you can kind of rationalize it before you think too in-depth about it, that this is not intentional. Our friends are always hanging out without us, regardless if we see it or not, and to kind of prevent those emotions from taking over ourselves and really spending too much time thinking about these things. Just awareness in general, I think, is the major takeaway.
How hard is that, particularly for young people who've grown up not only with computers, but with social media and generally with the computers in their hands?
It is. It is incredibly intense. And I know from my own personal experience, I try to be aware of how often I'm using social media and I'm on my phone. And I find that when I actually do that and I don't look at Facebook before I go to bed, I feel a little bit better about myself. And although it is difficult, I think that being aware of your environment, your face-to-face interactions, and just being present in the moment and not on social media, I think it has implications for individuals' overall well-being.
You anticipated a question I was going to ask anyway, which is whether you changed your own use of social media from what you've learned in your research, and it sounds like you have.
I try so very hard, but, you know, sometimes I fall ill to it because it's so easily accessible, but you have to be in the moment and aware of these things, so I try.
You know, I was going to ask about the gender and age split, since all your research subjects, it sounds like, came from classes at the University at Buffalo. You're not going to have much of an age difference, but is there a gender split in susceptibility?
I would say so from the other literature that I've looked at. Women, just they typically focus more on relationships, and there's an evolutionary basis for that, but we tend to focus on who's communicating with who, when, and we're just more orientated towards the social aspect of relationships. So I definitely think that women are a little bit more susceptible to these things, but I know that men also experience some of these things too.
So then how do you test the research and get the results replicated? Has anybody else picked up the mantle and wants to do a similar sort of study?
I've seen a few studies looking at ostracism online, but what I think is novel about our own research and what I'm continuing to work on now is looking at actual Facebook and the exposure to these real-time conversations. I haven't really seen too much research looking at actual using Facebook and exposing participants to these transcripts of conversations in real time and focusing on their attention yet, but me and my research team are definitely looking forward to doing that in the future.
Okay, more research to come, obviously, from the University at Buffalo and other institutions as well. But that is where Jessica Covert and her partner, Michael Stefanone, worked on a study called Does Rejection Still Hurt? Examining the Effects of Network Attention and Exposure to Online Social Exclusion. That's in Social Science Computer Review, published in August. Jessica Covert, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.